The Shadow Side of the Good by Heather Plett. On an episode of the TV show The Good Place, we're introduced to Doug Forsett, a former stoner who, during a magic mushroom trip, figured out the formula for the afterlife, i.e. how to make enough points to get into the good place. Doug is living a quote-unquote perfect life, ensuring each choice he makes gains him points. He lives on a farm in Canada where he is kind to a fault, treats every plant and animal with respect, and never fails to recycle. It doesn't take long to discover, though, that Doug is living a paralyzed and tortured life. He goes into spasms of guilt and fear every time he makes a misstep, i.e. he steps on a snail and kills it. He eats nothing but radishes and lentils and drinks his own filtered urine, and he allows himself to be victimized by the neighborhood bully who takes advantage of his extreme altruism and forgiveness. In the last scene that we see Doug, he is about to walk hundreds of miles to make a donation in atonement for killing the snail. Yes, there is a shadow side to trying too hard to be good. That shadow deepens when, in the next episode, it is revealed that every good choice has dozens of ripple effects that are bad, i.e. buying an organic tomato that has to be shipped a long distance from another country where there are no ethical labor practices. And even Doug hasn't made enough points to get into the good place. That episode was fresh in my memory this past weekend when I was doing some research into the trauma of my people, the Mennonites. Inspired by the Collective Trauma Summit, I'd come across a master's thesis about the trauma suffered by Russian Mennonite women who suffered under the Stalinist regime. Note, my own branch of the Mennonites had left Russia for Canada before this time, when their right to conscientious objector status was taken away and they were forced to join the army. The torture suffered by the Mennonites under Stalin was brutal. Because they were identified as ethnic Germans, they were treated as the enemy during the First and Second World Wars. Their villages were destroyed, their land and or harvested crops were taken from them, and they were left without food. Many women were raped, and in some villages, all of the men over 16 were killed or put in prison. For 25 years, until they eventually fled the country, they were treated to unimaginable horrors. About half of the families that fled were female-led because so many men were killed. As I read through the accounts of these atrocities, this paragraph landed the most heavily on my heart. Quote, "What complicated these traumatic experiences for Mennonites was the fact that they did not defend themselves against such assault, upholding their 400-year pacifist stance. In many cases, husbands and fathers witnessed the brutal rapes of their wives and daughters and did not retaliate." Unquote. I reread that paragraph several times, overcome with the horror of what it must have been like to be a woman who was not only brutally raped, but whose father or husband did nothing to stop it. What utter betrayal that must have been to know that someone you loved chose their need to be good, according to their faith, over protecting you, their beloved. That deep-seated value of pacifism, a core tenet of the Mennonite faith that is, in many ways, quite beautiful, has the ironic potential to create the conditions for the greatest form of betrayal for the most marginalized among the community, the women. Much like the fictional Doug Forsett, they were paralyzed by their belief in what it means to be good, and the result of that paralysis was betrayal of those they loved most. Side note, as I've written before, after my own rape in my early 20s, my own pacifist father responded by admitting how he suddenly saw in himself a capacity to kill my rapist. That was both surprising and comforting for me at the time. I don't know, though, what he would have done had he been given the opportunity to defend me. There is a shadow side to pacifism, just as there is a shadow side of trying too hard to be good, and far too often, it's those with little power who are the most impacted by that shadow. An insistence on goodness, in fact, can become a tool of oppression, by which those with power can keep those without power in line and silent. Here are a few other shadows worth reflecting on. The shadow side of gratitude. While there has been much written about the values of living a grateful life, i.e. having a gratitude practice can build resilience and hope and help us live in greater freedom, the shadow side is that it can be a form of spiritual bypassing. When we force ourselves or others to be grateful, we ignore the very real pain and grief that we need to process and hold space for in order to heal and transform it. Those darker emotions that we bury when we turn too quickly to gratitude will find more destructive ways of surfacing later on, as trauma, addictions, physical ailments, emotional breakdowns, etc. The shadow side of forgiveness. Much like gratitude, forgiveness can be a form of spiritual bypassing in which we rush past the complexity of our genuine feelings of rage, pain, betrayal, etc., deny ourselves the right to justice, repair, and healing, and let the other person off the hook before they've shown genuine remorse. Forgiveness, if there is no remorse and atonement on the part of the person who's done the wrong, puts the burden of emotional labor on the shoulders of the victim. And while it may be personally healing for them to forgive, it may also serve to re-victimize them and deny them of their full humanity. In the case of domestic abuse, for example, forgiveness may lead to further abuse. In order to extricate themselves, the victim may instead need to hang on to the rage at least long enough to propel themselves out of the situation and establish the boundaries that protect them. The shadow side of civility. As a recovering conflict avoider, I've long believed that civility was one of the highest goods. But then I started to learn, especially through BIPOC people whose wisdom I value, that an insistence on civility can have harmful consequences. For one thing, it's almost always those who already have more power who get to decide the rules about what is civil and what is not. For another thing, asking for civility when people have a genuine right to have strong emotions related to their oppression and victimization can be to silence shame and further oppress them. And for a third thing, an insistence on civility can often lead to more insidious and underhanded forms of communication, i.e. passive aggressiveness, manipulation, tone policing, etc., rather than more direct and truthful forms. The shadow side of charity. When I used to work in international development, we used to have long debates about the best ways to support people in need. One of the things that often came up was the way that charity, if it isn't nuanced and offered with care and respect for people's dignity and sovereignty, can be destructive and further contribute to an unjust world. For example, much of the charity we saw in international development comes from a place of white saviorism, where more privileged white people think they know what's best for less privileged people of color, and it makes them feel good to impose that charity on them. Misplaced charity can also be disruptive to the local economy, i.e. dumping used clothing on Kenyan markets means that much of their local clothing industry has disappeared, and can be disempowering to those who'd be better served by justice. The shadow side of peace. As I mentioned above, I was raised in a long lineage of pacifism, and so keeping the peace was one of the highest goods. But the result of that kind of a belief system was that it took a long time to leave an abusive situation. I often remained silent in the face of injustice. I let people I loved get hurt. And to this day, I often have a trauma response when voices are raised and conflict bubbles. When peace is valued too highly, it is largely the most marginalized who suffer. In the book Women Talking, Miriam Taves writes a fictional account of the true story of a Mennonite settlement in which women were being drugged and raped, and none of the male leaders were listening to their cries for justice. The male leaders were more intent on keeping the peace, i.e. forgiving the men who did it and restoring them to community, than they were in caring for the victims of the rapes. Quote, "We are not members," says one of the women, "we are commodities. When our men have used us up so that we look 60 when we're 30 and our wombs have literally dropped out of our bodies onto our spotless kitchen floors, finished, they turn to our daughters." End quote. The shadow side of good intentions. The problem with good intentions is that we often hide behind them and think that they are enough, even when those good intentions have undesirable outcomes. But what about when the impact is different from the intent? What if, for example, we extend charity, as mentioned above, that results in disempowerment or further injustice? Can we simply say, "Well, that wasn't my intention," and go on doing what we've always done? No, not if we want to live in a just and ethical world, especially when we have more agency than the person negatively impacted by our good intentions. We have to be willing to take responsibility for the impact, learn to do better, and make necessary repairs and or change our future behavior. The shadow side of positivity. In the self-help world in recent years, there's been a lot of talk of the value of positive thinking and the power of attraction, i.e. if we think positive thoughts, we attract positive things. But there's a lot of shadows that usually are not discussed by the self-help gurus. For one thing, insisting that people are responsible for what they attract is a convenient way of overlooking the injustice of the world and blaming a person for the bad that comes their way. I.e., if you lose your job, it must be your own fault for your bad attitude rather than the racist behavior of your boss. For another thing, just as gratitude can be a form of spiritual bypassing, positivity can also deny and shut down the full expression of our humanity in a way that short-circuits healing, growth, and justice. I write this not to say that we should toss aside our civility, pacifism, forgiveness, gratitude, etc. No, quite the opposite. I think we should embrace them more fully and with more clarity, holding them up to the light so that we can see them for all of the shades of complexity contained within. I think we should examine each of these good things and use our discernment to help us see when we're slipping from the light into the shadows. To embrace these good things blindly rather than examining them is to choose to stay in an immature binary spirituality and worldview. Sometimes, when we witness the shadow side of the good, we'll need to make choices that make us feel like we're deviating from our values, and especially when those values are attached to our sense of safety and belonging, i.e. part of our religious upbringing, social conditioning, and or community values, that can feel like self-betrayal and can result in a trauma response. But perhaps what it really means, when we pause to reflect on it, is that we have developed a more nuanced and robust value system that's indicative of our growth. For more writing like this, check out heatherplatt.com/blog.